Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, January 16th, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, local Republicans turn out in droves on frigid Iowa caucus night. Story by Benjamin Fisher, benjamin.fisher@thmedia.com. Thousands of eastern Iowa Republicans braved Monday's sub-zero temperatures to participate in their party's first-in-the-nation Iowa caucuses, which delivered former President Donald Trump the first win of the primary season. Schools, community centers, and other sites across eastern Iowa drew big crowds Monday night. At the Table Mount Elementary School caucus site in Dubuque, Dubuque County GOP volunteer Paul Kurtz said, as participants poured into the venue, that party officials reported overall county participation in the 2024 caucuses appeared to be higher than it was in 2016. Some participants even walked in the minus 10 degree temperatures to Table Mount Elementary from the parking lot of Happy's Place on Rockdale Road once the school's parking lot filled up before 6:30 p.m. And while Trump had received a little more than 50% of the votes statewide by the Telegraph Herald's print deadline Monday night, his lead was much narrower at some local caucus sites, and he came in second in some Dubuque County precincts. Deborah Borley wore a black fur coat and a white cap emblazoned with Trump Caucus Captain in gold thread at Table Mount Elementary School. She said she was solid in her support for the former president. "He is the only president in my lifetime who made promises when he campaigned, won, and then kept those promises," she said. At Piazza Community Center, Melissa Brem of Piazza, Iowa, said she would be caucusing for Trump because she felt he had, quote, proven himself in his 4 years as president. "He is very well connected to his voters, and I've seen him be committed to keeping his promises to voters in a way I just don't see with the other candidates," she said. "I also just see a lot of enthusiasm around his campaign." At the Piazza site, a total of 221 votes were cast for Trump. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis received 120 votes, closely followed by former United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley at 118. Businessman Vivek Ramaswamy received 39 votes, and former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson and Texas Pastor Ryan Binkley each received one. But Trump had plenty of competition for his hold on Iowa caucus scores. The crowd at Table Mount Elementary was dotted with high visibility orange caps worn by supporters of DeSantis. Dozens of others waved DeSantis campaign auction paddles. "I'm a Christian, so I like his views on a lot of things," said Nick Van Orsdell, who participated in his first caucuses and supported DeSantis. "He's done great things in Florida that I would like to see all over." That was before DeSantis himself arrived to stump before the crowd. "As a candidate, I'll get the job done, just like I did in Florida, winning a record victory all up and down the ballot," DeSantis told the Table Mount crowd. "As a leader, I'll always be someone who conducts myself in a way you can be proud of." DeSantis won Dubuque County's Precinct 1 at Table Mount on Monday, with 48 votes to Trump's 47, Haley's 30, and Ramaswamy's 7. George Greg Kuhlman of Piazza wore one of DeSantis' orange caps at his caucus site and also lauded the Florida governor's work in the Sunshine State. "I'm caucusing for DeSantis because of his values and his track record of what he's done in Florida," Kuhlman said. "He's an honest man, and I think he's going to truly represent us." About an hour before the caucus began, Sherry Kuhlman was still undecided as to who she would support. She was mostly torn between Haley and DeSantis. "I'm waiting to hear what people have to say," she said. "It's early on, and if you want your candidate to move forward, now's the time because most of them will drop out after Iowa if they don't have a good showing." Helene McGee of Dubuque stumped for Haley at Table Mount on Monday. Ahead of her speech, she told the Telegraph Herald she was sure Haley had the best chance of beating President Joe Biden in the general election. "Trump can't win against Joe Biden," she said. "Trump endorsed people in 2018 and they lost. So Trump has no coattails. Nikki Haley has coattails. She could deliver the Senate and the House in a way no other candidate can." Not all of McGee's message was taken well by Trump supporters in Table Mount's crowd, many of whom jeered loudly when she mentioned Trump's increase to the federal debt when in office, and booed even louder when she said Trump couldn't win in the general election. Justin Romero, Piazza, caucused at the Piazza Community Center for Ramaswamy. He's a younger guy, and I think he has a lot of things going for him. He's a smart businessman, Romero said of Ramaswamy. The main thing, though, is he said that as president, he would pardon the peaceful protesters from January 6th. I have a buddy who's in prison who's doing 30 months from that. Some familiar faces from Eastern Iowa politics were also present at caucus sites, including former U.S. Representative Rod Blum, who appeared at Table Mount. He's a co-chair of Trump's re-election campaign in Iowa and said before the caucus started that he was concerned what the weather might do to his candidate's results. I'm not on the ballot this year, but I still feel nervous, he told the TH. Rural people, this isn't going to scare them so much. They can get out, but I don't know. Trump's campaign organized so much better this year than 2016, so I'm still optimistic. Meanwhile, Iowa Democratic Party caucuses focus on party business, growth in new year. Participants voted on county central committee members and county convention delegates. Story by Maya.Bond at thmedia.com. More than two dozen local residents ventured out in bitter cold temperatures to gather at Carver Elementary School in Dubuque on Monday for the 2024 Iowa Democratic presidential caucuses. This year's Democratic in-person caucuses look different from years past. With the state party's presidential preference contest taking place by mail, caucus goers instead focused on state and local party updates, completing precinct and delegate elections, and working on the county's party's platform. Tonight is solely focused on what we can do as Democrats in Iowa to build this party up to be a machine that reflects Democratic values and elects Democratic leaders, Dubuque County Democrats Chairman Matt Robinson said in an interview. Participants voted on Dubuque County Democratic Central Committee members and County Convention delegates and committee members and had the opportunity to add resolutions to the county party's platform. Besides the formal task at hand, Robinson said the night was also about celebrating the successes of the past year, such as the launch of the Young Democrats of Dubuque County and the formation of a partnership with the local Carpenters Union. Above all, for me, it's getting people together, getting out to see your fellow Democrats, to know we are fighting this fight together. We are not in this alone. You do have friends and neighbors in this battle together, Robinson said. Carver was one of five Democratic caucus sites in Dubuque County. Many attendees said they came to remain active in the local party, vote in local party elections, and understand any platform updates. Michaela Freiberger, 34, of Dubuque, said no matter what the caucuses look like, they're still a good way to learn how democracy works and for local voices to be heard. It's always important to stay active in whatever platforms your party that you align with is discussing and making sure that you're aware of what's going on within your county level, she said. Judy Bogie, 69, of Dubuque, said she wanted to show support for the Democratic Party, particularly because she is worried about Iowa pursuing more conservative policies. She said she is, quote, concerned, quote, especially when I hear the Republican presidential candidates talk about disbanding the Department of Education, the Department of Justice. We need a hierarchy of administration to carry out advocates to fund these programs, she said. Peter Healy, 58, of Asbury, has caucused numerous times before. He said he attended because he wants to stay involved. They switched up the format of the caucus, so I wanted to put my signature for some people who are running, and then I wanted to see what some of the platforms are that they're going to propose, he said. Those wishing to participate in the Iowa Democratic Party's mail-in presidential preference contest can request a presidential preference card until February 19th. More information is available at iowademocrats.org. Maya Bond, who wrote this story, is a Report for AmeriCorps member. Legislators representing Joe Davis County look to tackle budget migrant services. Story by Elizabeth Kelsey at thmedia.com. Dateline Galena, Illinois. Illinois lawmakers representing Joe Davis County look to hold the line at state spending and address the state's increasing migrant population, among other topics, as Illinois General Assembly convenes this week. State legislative session begins Tuesday, January 16th. Illinois Senator Andrew Chesney R. Freeport said he considers it the legislature's first duty to pass a responsible budget. something he feels the Democratic majority has not yet done in the 5 years he's served in the General Assembly. Republicans are going to continue to demand budget restraints and budget discipline, Chesney said. We saw an increase in revenues due to hyperinflation, but we are now anticipating revenue flattenings and reductions, so we need to have a serious conversation about the priorities of our budget. Illinois Representative and House Republican Leader Tony McCombie R. Savannah agreed that fiscal responsibility is top of her mind as the session begins. She also plans to propose a bill to address what she sees as deficiencies in a new law that took effect January 1 and requires employers to offer 40 hours of paid leave to full-time employees who have worked for them for at least 3 months. That policy is going to be pretty detrimental to small businesses, nonprofits, and municipalities that employ, for example, students, she said. There are some fixes that are needed. Chesney also expects the legislature to have, quote, serious and robust debate, end quote, about the state's recent influx of migrants and services those individuals receive, particularly health care. More than 330,000 asylum seekers from the U.S. southern border have arrived in Illinois since August 2022, according to the state's website. Since 2020, Illinois has offered state-funded health care coverage to low-income individuals age 65 and older, regardless of immigration status. The program was expanded to cover those age 42 to 64 in 2022, however, the state paused enrollment in the program last year. The health care we provide for migrants and illegal immigrants is the best health care in the state, better than that virtually of every citizen who resides here illegally, Chesney said. Republicans and Democrats are far apart on this issue. Since it is a presidential election year, both Chesney and McCombie said they expect the legislative session to be quieter than normal in terms of the number of, quote, controversial, end quote, bills proposed, at least until after Illinois' March primary. Both also acknowledge that as Democrats control both legislative chambers and hold the governor's office, that party will set the tone for the session. Our ability to change the law is very difficult, but that doesn't mean we won't continue to try, Chesney said. We have to generate policy that works for everyone. Officials with the Illinois Democratic Party and Joe Davis County Democrats, as well as the office of Illinois House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, D. Hillside, did not respond to requests for comment. Love that lasts, common courtesy, a family trait for a Dubuque couple for 58 years. Story by Michelle London, michelle.london@thmedia.com. Tom Rydell and Sue Sitzman, both born and raised in Dubuque, loved going to teen dances that were held every weekend at Melody Mill when they were young. I would go with my girlfriends, said Sue, now 77. It was just a fun time. Tom and Sue, who would later become Sue Rydell, didn't know each other. Tom attended Wallert High School, and Sue was a student at Academy of the Visitation, but fate brought them together one night when Jerry Lee Lewis was playing the mill. I was supposed to go to a birthday party, said Tom, now 79, but I wanted to hear Jerry Lee Lewis play, so I decided to go late to the party so I could see him. As usual, Sue was at the mill that night with her girlfriends, who were all on the dance floor. She was sitting alone at a table when Tom noticed her. I decided to ask her to dance, he said. After the dance, Tom asked if he could take Sue home. I said, well, if you do that, you'll have to take my girlfriend too, Sue said, because my parents wouldn't have approved of me being brought home by a boy alone. So Tom took Sue and her friend home to Sue's house after the dance. And then I walked my girlfriend home from my house, Sue said, laughing. Tom didn't leave without Sue's phone number, and he soon called her for their official first date. It happened to be my birthday, Tom said. Sue said, he took me to Timmerman's Supper Club, and I was really impressed. Tom, like Sue, was a bit hesitant about asking her out again. I was from the North End, he said, and she was different from what we thought was a rich part of town. Different worlds, but they kept going out. After about 7 dates, Sue was still waiting for that first kiss. So we were out, and he just said, hey, and gave him a kiss, Sue recalled. Then I said, Pearl Harbor, sneak attack. Tom wasn't sure what to think, though he liked the kiss. At first, I thought she was going to say, hey, I got somebody else, he said. Sue said she knew Tom was a guy for her. He was just so nice. His family was nice. He was kind. He treated me really well. And he treated his mother so well. Someone always told me to watch how a man treats his mother because that's how they'll treat you. So I knew he was a good guy. The couple married November 26, 1965, at Church Nativity. They have 3 sons, Scott, Brian, and Jason, and 9 grandchildren. They also have 1 great-granddaughter. They recently celebrated their 50th anniversary. Both worked a few other jobs before landing at John Deere Dubuque Brooks. Tom is a security officer and Sue in administrative offices. They both had long careers at Deere. Tom retired from his job in security in 2003 after almost 31 years. Sue retired as a senior accounting clerk in 2001 after 27 years. With Tom working nights and Sue working days, their oldest son, Scott of Galena, Illinois, said he and his brothers rarely had a babysitter. "We really lucked out there," he said. "Dad would get us off to school when he got home from work. Mom would always be there in evenings. There was always one of them there." Tom and Sue have traveled extensively throughout the U.S., both on their own and with guided tour groups provided through John Deere. They also enjoyed a 7-country European trip with another couple and took their entire family on a Caribbean cruise to celebrate their 40th anniversary. Despite some recent health challenges, they have stayed active with their Nativity Church parish. Sue has served on several committees and held several leadership posts, including president of the parish council. They also belong to an over 60 social group through the church, where they enjoy meeting on occasional evenings for a meal and game of cards. Tom, who said he got a bit bored after retirement, works part-time a few days a week at Dodge Street IV. "I'm a jack of all trades there," he said. "Whatever they need me to do, I do." Scott said he relishes the human interaction he gets from a job. "He really doesn't have any hobbies, so it's not like he's out on the golf course or anything," he said. "He gets bored if he doesn't have anything to do. He loves to talk to people when he's bagging groceries or whatever it is he's doing. He runs into people he knows all the time." With tongue in cheek, Tom said he knows the secret to their long marriage. "I work nights and she worked days," he said. "Weekends weren't for fighting. They were for being with each other." Sue said common courtesy has always been a part of their relationship, and Scott said it is an attribute that he carried, that is carried down to him and his brothers. "They were always thinking of each other," he said. "My dad loves those candy circus peanuts. Whenever I see them, I think of him and I pick them up. It's something I always do for my wife, too." His parents are pleased to know that quality was passed down to their sons. "When your spouse does something for you, you should say please or thank you, the same way you would for anyone else," Sue said. "You're out somewhere and you say, 'Oh, there's his favorite candy bar. I'll pick one up.' It lets them know you're thinking of them. It's those little common courtesies and little surprises that make it special." Know a long married couple? Love the Lass is a series highlighting local couples who have been married at least 50 years. To nominate a couple to be featured in this series, contact reporter Michelle London at 563-588-5655 or email her at michelle.london@thmedia.com. Be sure to include the couple's name, city of residence, contact information, how long the two have been married, and their wedding date. Library to Hold Adult Craft Night, Dateline Lancaster, Wisconsin. An adult craft night with an earthly twist is coming to a Southwest Wisconsin library this month. Shriner Memorial Library will host a craft night at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 23rd at the library, 113 West Elm Street in Lancaster. Attendees will create a, quote, moss wall decor item under the guidance of 3 crafty leaders. Some crafty materials will be available at the event, but attendees also are encouraged to bring items they found in nature to individualize their piece. Each decor piece will be 12 inches by 12 inches in size. Space is limited, so registration is required. Interested individuals can do so by calling the library at 608-723-7304 or by emailing kholman-steffel@swls.org. Free archery clinic set for January 28th, Dateline, Belmont, Wisconsin. An area extension office hopes to be right on target with an upcoming community event. University of Wisconsin-Madison Lafayette County Extension will host an archery clinic at 1 p.m. January 28th in the Belmont School District Upper Gymnasium, 646 East Liberty Street. The free clinic is open to all ages and skill levels. Participants will go over archery basics to sharpen their skills under the guidance of skilled archers. A second clinic is slated for February, although an exact date has not been finalized. For more information, interested parties can visit Facebook. Seminar examines controlled burns and habitat management. Dateline, Galena, Illinois. An upcoming local seminar and art exhibit will focus on controlled burns used for woodland habitat and undergrowth management. Carrying the torch will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. January 27th at Galena Center for the Arts, 971 Gear Street, according to an online announcement. The art exhibit will be open to registered attendees from noon to 5 p.m. The art exhibit opens to the public from 1 to 4 p.m. January 28th. The event is hosted by the Northwest Illinois Forestry Association, Woodland Wildlife Cooperative, and University of Illinois Extension. University of Michigan graduate Jillian Moore will be the featured speaker and artist. Moore will share her perspectives as a conservation ecologist and a U.S. Forest Service wildland firefighter. The seminar also includes a panel discussion. Seating is limited and registration is required by January 24th and can be made online at go.illinois.edu/torch. Beginner wood carving class planned. Dateline Galena, Illinois. A wood carving class for beginners is planned for later this month. Marie McDonough will lead the class, which will take place from noon to 3:30 p.m. on January 20th at Galena Center for the Arts, 971 Gear Street, according to an online announcement. During the class, attendees will learn the basics of power carving and use a small rotary tool to create a small wooden, quote, comfort bird, which can be either left plain or decorated with wood burning tools. The class costs $75 all supplies included. Interested individuals should visit, go online to fill out in the registration form, which should be emailed to gallerymanager@galenacenterforthearts.com. Delaware County Group presents Conservation Awards. Dateline Manchester, Iowa. The Delaware County Soil and Water Conservation District recently presented its 2023 Conservation Awards. The awards recognize landowners and operators in Delaware County who have taken action to conserve natural resources. Dick and Brenda Ludwig received the Conservation Farm Award in recognition of their work to reduce soil erosion, improve water quality, lessen the impact of flooding, improve wildlife habitat, trap sediment, and build soil health on their farm near Colesburg, Iowa. Chad and Jenny Robinson received the Don Ibe Memorial Award in recognition of their work to reduce soil erosion and protect water quality on the farm. They operate approximately a mile northwest of Greeley, Iowa. Mary and Parker Franson received the Arnold Lucan Fish and Wildlife Habitat Award for their work to improve, create, and conserve wildlife habitat on their property near Backbone State Park. Clayton County event features indoor-outdoor winter activities. Dateline, Elkader, Iowa. A free event in Clayton County features indoor and outdoor winter activities. The Winter Festival event will be held from 3 to 10 p.m. January 27th at Elkader Golf and Country Club, 24361 Gunder Road, according to an online announcement. Participants may bring a sled to hit the slopes of the golf course or take in the stars for nighttime hiking or cross-country skiing along Luminaria trails. The night will be capped off with hot cocoa and a fire. Fayette County Conservation will have snowshoes to loan to people ages 10 and older from 3 to 5 p.m. Indoor activities include live country and blues music by John Till, Gotroper, and Marcus Morell from 4 to 10 p.m. Food and drink will be available. Building owner enrolls in facade improvement program. Dateline Dyersville, Iowa. Dyersville City Council recently approved an agreement with a local property owner to improve the look of a downtown building. Council members approved a deal with Craig Osterhaus Carpentry to enroll the property at 210 2nd Street Northeast in the Dyersville Building Facade Program. The property is commonly known as the Millwork Building. In exchange for entering an easement agreement with the city, Craig Osterhaus Carpentry will be compensated for 50% of the cost, up to $20,000 for cosmetic changes and improvements that are nearing completion on the exterior of the building. The city will hold an easement on the property's facade for a minimum of 7 years. Divine Word College seeks volunteer tutors. Dateline Epworth, Iowa. Divine Word College seeks volunteers to tutor the school's international students. The students can speak English but wish to become more fluent and may need help with pronunciation, vocabulary, and general conversation in English. No teaching experience is required. The students at Epworth School come from a variety of countries around the globe and are preparing for a life of service as missionaries, clergy, or lay leadership. Contact Seo Hyun Park at 563-876-3000. 3353 extension 394 or spark@dwci.edu for more information. Naturalist to speak at Prairie Management Seminar. Deadline Maquoketa, Iowa. Jackson County Conservation Naturalist will speak as part of a virtual seminar on prairie management. Naturalist Tony Vorwald will be featured in Tallgrass Prairie Center's Protecting Prairie, Becoming Effective Advocates for Our Endangered Remnants, according to an online event announcement. The virtual seminar, the first of three seminars planned this year by Cedar Falls-based Tallgrass Prairie Center, will take place at 4 p.m. Thursday, January 25th. Vorwald, along with, quote, prairie advocate Ray Hamilton, will discuss the protection and management of Codfish Hollow Prairie and other such remnant prairies. The event is free and open to the public. For more information and to register, visit tallgrassprairiecenter.org. Dubuque event speaker. Faith-fueled MLK's social justice activities. Story by Eric Holkstrom at thmedia.com. A speaker at a Dubuque event described how the role of Martin Luther King Jr.'s contemplative connection to his faith fueled his social justice activism. He was not just an activist, he was also a deeply spiritual person who led from what he heard from God. Ruth Haley Barton said, "Today we honor a man who had a God-given dream and described that dream in a way so we could begin to follow it." Barton, author of, quote, Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership, and president and CEO of Transforming Center of Wheaton, Illinois, delivered the keynote address at the annual Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday celebration in Dubuque. The event drew about 290 people to Grand River Center on Monday morning. Hosted by Faces and Voices, the event was sponsored by the City of Dubuque, Dubuque Community Schools and Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. Barton said King's life and work demonstrated the importance of staying connected with our soul as we lead around really important issues. She described that connectivity as a sacred rhythm between prayer and action. Rhythm between prayer and action means you move between the two, Barton said. There are times of quiet, times for allowing God to strengthen you, or times to strengthen your inner resources. Then there is having some sense of what there is to do in the world and getting out and doing it. Maurice Willis, 16, of Dubuque, is a junior at Dubuque Senior High School who attended the event. Initially, I came here because I heard about the event in school, and I really didn't know what it entailed. A lot of people here had a lot of good things to say that a lot of people needed to hear, but don't always seek to hear, Willis said. Willis's classmate, Owen May 17 of Dubuque, said he appreciated the mix of people in attendance at Monday's event. I liked how there were community leaders, but also religious figures and students, May said. May said he found Barton's description of King's spirituality to be educational. You always hear about his accomplishments for civil rights, but you don't hear about how he was motivated and how he can be such a great leader, May said. Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said Martin Luther King Jr. Day and the local event both provide an opportunity to renew efforts to increase inclusivity and fairness. I always look at this day as a day for all of us to pause and take stock on where we are as a community when it comes to things like being truly inclusive and actually working toward what I would call real equality, the stuff that Dr. Martin Luther King really stood for, and the things that he asked of us, Kavanaugh said. In crime news, man sentenced for pulling gun during Dubuque disturbance. Man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for pointing a gun at a teenager during a Dubuque disturbance. Farrell M. Moore Porter, 19, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Court Associate Judge Mark T. Hostager in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of assault with a dangerous weapon. Court documents state that police responded at 10:16 p.m. August 11th for a report of a man pulling a gun on a 15-year-old male. A witness told police the person with the gun drove from the scene in a red vehicle in the 1900 block of Jack Street, documents state. Documents state the traffic camera footage showed a group of people gathered near the intersection of East 19th and Jackson Streets when two individuals in the group squared up as if they were about to fight. One individual, later identified as Moore Porter, then pulled a black handgun out of his waistband and chased a group of people who were running from the scene, documents state. The 15-year-old male was among the people running away. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, and the date is Tuesday, January 16, 2024. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Charles E. Severdine. Charles Chuck E. Severdine, 77, of Dubuque, formerly Bellevue, passed away on Thursday, January 11, 2024, at Bethany Home in Dubuque. Funeral Mass will be 11 a.m. Thursday, January 18, 2024, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue. Visitation will be at 9 a.m., 10:30 to 10:30 a.m. prior to Mass at Hockman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. Following Mass, burial with military honors conducted by Bellevue American Legion Post 273 will be in St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery in Bellevue. Chuck was born January 2, 1947 in Bellevue, the son of Lawrence and Lucille Dempy Wolf Severdine. He graduated from Marquette High School in 1966. He served in the U.S. Army Reserves during the Vietnam War. He then worked for John Deere Works, Dubuque, for 30 years in heat treatment and a utility until he retired. He enjoyed spending time with family and friends, bowling, playing baseball, and going to music concerts. He also enjoyed going out to eat with friends and staying active. He was known for his goofy playfulness and humor, and most recently was a beloved resident at Bethany Home in Dubuque. Survivors include his children, Kim Jonathan Nelson of East Dubuque, Scott Crystal Severdine of Urbandale, grandchildren, and other relatives. He was preceded in death by his two parents, siblings, and in-laws, Francis Severdine, Ruth Ann Womeldorf, Lawrence and Jan Severdine, Janet McFadden, Marcy and Bob Engelman, Jan Severdine, Paul, Linda Severdine, and Roland Armstrong. Donations may be made in his name to Bethany Home in Dubuque. Online condolences may be expressed to the family at www.hockmanfuneralhome.com. Marilyn R. Altoff, Dateline Earlville, Iowa. Marilyn Rose Altoff, 66 of Earlville, passed away peacefully on Friday, January 12, 2024, after a hard-fought battle with ALS. She was in her home surrounded by her loving family. Marilyn was born March 25, 1957 in Manchester, the daughter of Matthias and Alberta Holst Ronnebaum. She was raised in the Irvine area with her six siblings and received her education at St. Joseph's Catholic School and Beckman High School. On October 20, 1973, she was united in marriage to Gary Altoff, and they brought into the world three beautiful children. Visitation will be from 2 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, January 17, 2024, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue at the funeral home from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday prior to funeral mass. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, January 18, 2024 at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Earlville, with burial in the church cemetery. Reverend Critch Podhaski will officiate with Deacon Jim Steger officiating. Her kindness and passion to care for others was seen through all of her careers. Starting as a stay-at-home mom, she provided in-home daycare and spent multiple years at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester. Marilyn found her calling while pouring herself into work at Hill and Dales in Dubuque, supporting people with disabilities. Her servant leadership and tireless devotion to her work showed through nearly 32 years with the organization, 16 of those years spent leading as the CEO. She traveled the United States serving on numerous boards and committees, acting as a passionate advocate. Her monumental and positive impact on literally thousands of lives cannot be understated. People live longer, live more meaningful lives because Marilyn always pushed forward for more, for better for the individual. She loved music and shared her beautiful voice, singing for church services and weddings with Kathy Johannes, Craig Dalton, Craig Carton, and Daryl Lent. Along with singing, she loved playing her 12-string guitar. She was always surrounded by music, whether it be live music, as she attended many concerts in the kitchen listening to the radio, or jamming out in her bug convertible with the top down. She also loved traveling the world with Gary and her family. She and Gary traveled to 49 of 50 states, only missing Alaska as her cruise was canceled due to COVID. She loved showing the world to her kids and grandkids, taking them on many trips. She was a huge Hawkeye fan, having season tickets for Iowa football. Marilyn and Gary were even gifted with cardboard cutouts in their seats when they couldn't attend due to COVID. If they weren't at all at the game, they were watching Hawks play at home. Above all, Marilyn cherished time spent with her family and treasured every moment. Her grandkids were her world, and she never missed a sporting event, musical, play, or any activity they were involved in. She loved spending time with all of her family, friends, and creating memories. Left to cherish her memory are her husband of 50 years, Gary Altoff of Earlville, her four children, Tammy March of Earlville, Shannon, Deanne Althoff of Delhi, Joshua Althoff of Delhi, and Max Nilza Gordon of North Carolina, Panama, 7 grandchildren and other relatives. She was preceded in death by her parents. To recognize her life's work, memorials may be sent to Hill and Dales, 1011 Davis Street, Dubuque, Iowa, or www.hilldales.org. The family would like to thank Joe Bushman and the staff at Regional Family Health / Regional Medical Center and Teresa Tippett and the staff of Care Initiatives. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Elaine W. Hutchcroft. Dateline, Lamont, Iowa. Elaine Marie Hutchcroft, 89, of Lamont, Iowa, passed away peacefully, surrounded by her loved ones, on January 12, 2024, at Mill Valley Care Center in Bellevue, Iowa. Massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 17, 2024, at St. Joseph Key West Catholic Church with Monsignor Tom Toll officiating. Friends and family may visit from 9 a.m. until the time of Mass. Burial will be in Holy Rosary Cemetery in Lamont. Elaine was born November 5, 1934, to John and Isabel Shanahan Lammer on the family farm near Bernard, Iowa, the eldest of 7 siblings. In 1951, she met the love of her life, James Jim Hutchcroft, at a dance in Zwingli, Iowa. They married in 1954 and went on to have 9 children: Lois, Lori, Bill, Tom, Karen, Steve, Don, Dave, and Amy. She was an extraordinary mother, able to make all 9 of her children feel uniquely, yet equally loved and adored. She began her career with the U.S. Post Office in Lamont, Iowa, as a clerk in 1969. She went on to become the postmaster in Lamont in 1977, a position she enjoyed for 22 years. She loved the interaction with the community, with her post office work afforded her, and was proud to be part of the Postal Service. Many kids in the community remember her fondly for allowing them to wait for the bus in the post office on cold mornings and handing out half sticks of gum. She was also famous for her homemade popcorn balls on Halloween. In 1999, she retired and spent her time volunteering, gardening, quilting, and enjoying time with family and friends. Lifelong Catholic, she was active in church activities throughout her life and attended Mass regularly. Her faith was very important. Elaine was an incredibly kind and giving person. She loved her family deeply and was deeply loved in return. She had a great sense of humor and infectious laugh. She always put the needs of others before herself and was first to offer a hand to anyone who needed it. She was a beautiful soul inside and out. She is survived by her husband of nearly 70 years, James Hutchcroft. She is also survived by her children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, and some siblings and other in-laws. She was seated in death by her parents and other relatives. Elaine's family would like to express their sincere gratitude to the staff at Mill Valley Care Center and Hospice of Jackson County for the excellent care she received. Noel E. Kurt. Noel E. Kurt, 86, of Dubuque, passed away peacefully on January 13, 2024 at Hawkeye Center in Dubuque. Friends and family may visit from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 18, 2024, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where parish wake service will begin at 3 p.m. Mass of Christian burial will be held at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Trinity Catholic Church, on Friday, January 19th at 10 a.m. with Father Steve Garner officiating. Burial will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Dubuque. He was born December 12, 1937, in Iowa City, the son of Fred and Nora Devaney Kurt. He graduated from St. Columbkill's High School in 1956, where he was a lettered athlete in multiple sports. He attended Loras College for 2 years. He met the love of his life, Betty Jean Katz, at St. Columbkill's Fall Festival and married her on August 10, 1963, at Columbkill's in Dubuque. They were married for 46 years before Betty passed away in 2010. He and Betty were best with plus 10 children, and they had made an amazing parenting team. They had a wonderful marriage and modeled that for their children. The most serious issue in their marriage is probably when he was too eager to, as a volunteer taste tester for her holiday cookies. He worked for many years in the auto parts industry at SIG, Big A Auto Parts, and IWI Motor Parts. In retirement, he was a volunteer at Meals on Wheels and Finley Hospital. He was a member of Holy Trinity Catholic Church for the past 54 years. He spent a lot of time as a supportive spectator for his kids and his grandkids, played a lot of golf in retirement, and liked a good game of euchre. He enjoyed watching many sports on TV except soccer, as he would call it kickball. He was a big Iowa Hawkeye fan and was excited when his beloved Cubs won the World Series. In close games, he might yell at the TV and Betty would remind him that they couldn't hear him. He looked forward to the annual boys' trip with his six sons. He would take an RV trip to an away Hawkeye game. The trip included a nice meal, a glass of wine, and an inevitable sour face he would make when he sipped the wine. He had a sweet tooth, especially for chocolate. His only regret in all his years of marriage was that they did not have a chocolate cake at the wedding. Grandkids were known to call and ask if it was a good day for the Dairy Queen. "It was always a good day for the Dairy Queen," was his response. He told a lot of dad jokes, but he would sometimes laugh so hard that by the end, the punchline couldn't be understood. Though he'd been slipping away for a while, he was able to maintain a sense of humor till the end, using some of his standard one-liners. Surviving are his 10 children and other relatives. He was succeeded in death by his loving wife, Betty, and other relatives. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Boys and Girls Club of Dubuque in memory of Noel Curry. The family would like to thank Hawkeye Care Center and Hospice of Dubuque for their compassionate care for our beloved father. Here's information on area funeral services. John E. Bartels, Anadarko, Oklahoma. Visitation 9 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 19th. Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service 11 a.m. Friday, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Shirley I. Dock, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 1 to 6 p.m. with a time for sharing from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, January 20th, Happy's Place. Christopher J. Hermson, Janesville, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 a.m. to noon, Saturday, January 20th. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home Crematory, Lancaster. Service noon Saturday at the funeral home. Jeanette E. Loffenberg, Dubuque, visitation 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today. St. Anthony Catholic Church, service 10:30 a.m. at the church. Mary K. Lawrence, Benton, Wisconsin, visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 18th, Hunshield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, January 19th, St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Benton. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Linda Martins, Cambridge, Illinois. Visitation, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Wednesday, January 17th. Hockman Meyer Funeral Home Cremation Service, Bellevue, Iowa. Service, 12:30 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Lyle C. Filer, Rickardsville, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 10 a.m. today. Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service, 10:30 a.m. today. Holy Cross Catholic Church. Sarah E. Smith, Dubuque. Visitation, 8:30 to 11 a.m. Saturday, January 27th. St. Anthony Catholic Church. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. January 27th at the church. Here's another area obituary. William J. Ahman, Naples, Florida. William Bill Joseph Ahman, August 7, 1963 to January 6, 2024. He was preceded in death by his daughter Ellie, parents Eugene and Helen Ahman, mother and father-in-law, Donald and Libby Boskowski, brother-in-law, John Fleury. Survived by wife of 35 years, Barbara. Sons, Joseph, Joshua, and Zach. Sisters, Vicki, Larry Hubanks, Mary Fleury, Barbara, Bill Nauman, and other brothers and sisters. He is also survived by other relatives. Bill was born in Dubuque, Iowa, grew up in Farley, and then on the family farm in Bankston. He met Barb in Dallas, Texas, and they married in 1988. They moved to Minnesota, where Bill worked in aviation and loved it. He eventually started his own maintenance shop, which eventually became Twin Cities Aviation. He always said he loved aviation because he loved the people in that industry. They also grew their family. They adopted their four kids and were blessed to raise them in Woodbury, Minnesota. He was always involved in kids' lives. That included coaching baseball and go-kart racing. Minnesota is where they developed very special friendships with their Minnesota family. Tragically, their daughter Ellie was killed in a car accident in 2014. A couple years later, Bill and Barb decided to move to Naples, Florida. He continued to work in aviation until he suffered a massive stroke following heart surgery in 2021. He passed away from complications from the stroke. Bill was a laid-back kind of guy, enjoyed fishing, travel, and sitting around with families and friends drinking beer. He could strike up a conversation with anyone. He was always there to lend a hand to anyone who needed it. He left his mark on this world and will be missed by all those who knew him. It is what it is. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, January 20th, 2024, at the Best Western Hotel in Dubuque, Iowa, from 1 to 4 p.m. Friends and family of Bill would like you to join us as we celebrate the life of Bill. As per Bill's style, the event will be casual as well as his dress. If you're inclined to do so, his favorite teams are the Hawkeyes and Green Bay Packers. You may choose to dress in those colors. Robert J. Breitfelder. Robert J. Breitfelder, 87, Dubuque, died Sunday, January 14, 2024. Visitation will be from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 21, at Hoffensteiner Kitchen, Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. A Mass Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at St. Donatus, Iowa Catholic Church. Burial will be in the Mount Calvary Cemetery. Linda M. Hertenstein. Dayline Guttenberg, Iowa. Linda M. Hertenstein, 66, of Guttenberg, died Thursday, January 11th. Visitation will be from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, January 27th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Bellevue, where services will follow. Hockman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Bellevue is assisting the family. Rosemary Bloodsworth, Dayline Potosi, Wisconsin. Rosemary Bloodsworth, 85, of Potosi, died Friday, January 12, 2024. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Martin Schwartz Funeral Homes and Crematory at Potosi is assisting the family. Shirley Johnke, Dateline Galena, Illinois. Shirley Johnke, 96, of Galena, died Sunday, January 14, 2024. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. Looking at other area news. Man sentenced for pulling gun during the Dubuque disturbance. A man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for pointing a gun at a teenager during the Dubuque disturbance. Farrell M. Moore Porter, 19, of Cedar Rapids, recently received the sentence in Iowa District Court. Police say a woman threatens man with a knife during a Dubuque disturbance. Police said a woman threatened a man with a knife during a disturbance in Dubuque. Olivia J. Lyons, 25, no permanent address, was arrested at 11:43 p.m. Sunday in the 2600 block of Pinard Street on charges of assault while displaying a weapon and fourth-degree criminal mischief. Court documents state that Lyons was staying at a residence in Dubuque when she threatened a resident with a knife before damaging a remote control. Dubuque man sentenced for illegally opening fire hydrants. A Dubuque man has been sentenced for 2 to 5 years of probation for opening a dozen fire hydrants without authorization. James C. Davy, 57, recently received the deferred judgment from Iowa District Court Judge Thomas Bitter in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to 2 counts of second-degree criminal mischief. With a deferred judgment, the record of the case will be expunged if all probation obligations are met. The charges stem from a series of incidents between May 28th and June 7th in which the City of Dubuque Water Department reported that a dozen fire hydrants were opened by an individual without authorization, court documents state. Department employees told police each fire hydrant was open approximately 1/4 of the way and the cap was removed and left on the ground, documents state. Staff estimated the loss of water, wages paid to clothe the hydrants, and the fuel used to be $3,489. Police said traffic camera footage linked Davy and his vehicle to several of the incidents. Here's a look at local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported. Shannon L. Nineman, 42 of 2500 Washington Street, was arrested at 2:01 Sunday at her p.m. Sunday at her residence on a charge of domestic assault with injury. BizBuzz, Dubuque Brewing Company acquires Event Center. Northwest Illinois Tax Store opens. Cuba City Salon completes renovation. Joy by Grace Nyland. Grace.Nyland at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from the Tri-State area. This edition highlights developments in Dubuque, Stockton, Illinois, and Cuba City, Wisconsin. A Dubuque Brewing Company has acquired a well-known downtown event center. Seven Hills Brewing Company now manages the former Millwork Ballroom in the Novelty Ironworks building at 333 East 10th Street. The space has been rebranded as Seven Hills Ballroom and will continue to host weddings and other large events. The elegance and size of it alone is amazing, said Seven Hills CEO Keith Gutierrez. There's a sense of when you walk in of that historic rustic nature with the wood beams and the lighting, and it's a big draw for the wedding crowd. Already, Seven Hills Event Center operates at 1098 Jackson Street. Gutierrez said that space has found success hosting weddings, board meetings, and other private gatherings, as long as group sizes remain under roughly 150 people. In comparison, Seven Hills Ballroom can hold over 400. The size alone is huge, Gutierrez said. Seven Hills Event Center is great for smaller, more intimate gatherings, but we are losing a lot of those bigger wedding parties to a larger event spaces. Now, Gutierrez said, Seven Hills has something for everyone. The event center will continue to operate for smaller events. The ballroom can be booked for larger gatherings, and the Seven Hills restaurant and brew house at nearby 1085 Washington Street is available for more casual affairs. There are no major changes planned for the ballroom at this time, Gutierrez said, although alterations likely will be made over time to improve operational efficiency. Officials also plan to relocate the main ballroom entrance to Washington Street to be closer to the other Seven Hills operations. I expect a lot of cross-utilization of the three spaces, Gutierrez said. Ballroom reservations made prior to Seven Hills management will be honored, and further booking is available through Seven Hills. More information can be found online at www.sevenhillsbrew.com or by emailing events.sevenhillsbrew@gmail.com. Equine-centered Endeavor opens in Northwest Illinois. A new tack shop is open in Joe Davis County to cater to the local equestrian community. Hudson's Tack and More recently opened at 110 West Front Street in Stockton, Illinois. The store sells saddles and tack equipment and offers related services such as boot fitting and custom tack evaluations. Lots of behavioral issues with horse start with the tack, said store manager Christina Larkin. Ill-fitting tack makes horses unhappy, so we'll come out and make sure everything is fitting correctly and is comfortable. The Stockton store is named for Larkin's Heart Horse Hudson, a former member of White Plains, New York Mounted Police Unit. Now pushing 40, the thoroughbred is enjoying his retirement in the hills of Joe Davis County. Hudson has truly taught me more about horsemanship than I could ever hope to teach him, Larkin said. All merchandise at Stockton Tap Shop is Hudson approved, Larkin said, and each item comes with a local recommendation from a local rider. In addition to tack, the store also sells treats, supplements, and more. Stores open Monday through Wednesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Cuba City Hair Salon completes renovation, expands services. When Michelle Custer planned a total interior remodel of her Cuba City Hair Salon, there was one item she knew had to remain the same. Everything else was replaced or refurbished from the floor panels to the repainted elevated ceiling. Through all of it, though, however, one staple remained. Classic green barber chair that has stood in the shop for decades. I just knew it had to stay, Custer said. It had been here 50 years, so it's vintage now. Everyone knows that chair. Custer recently completed her renovation of Hometown Hair and Barber at 105 South Main Street after purchasing the business roughly 3 years ago from longtime area barber Joni Von Glahn. Custer has since worked to expand the salon's offerings for Cuba City residents. The salon now offers cut, color and styling services for women, men, and children, as well as a dedicated area for manicures and hair, nail care. Soon she will add eyelash technician to the team for eyelash extensions. Small towns deserve nice new things too, Custer said. Sometimes you need to be just able to go down the street for something like that instead of having to drive 30 minutes. I want people to come in and feel at home. That's why I named it Hometown Hair, she said. This fall, she also plans to start an exterior remodel to better match the salon's facade to its current brand and services. Hometown Hair currently is accepting new clients, Custer said, and the shop can be reached at 608-778-3643 or by calling 608-885-0177. Throughout the remodel, Custer said she kept the shop's namesake top of mind. She said she worked to keep the space homey and inviting so every client could feel comfortable coming in for their appointment. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, January 16th, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.